And so what we do is, under the concept of dependent rather than revocation, we disregard the revocation. Now, that analysis doesn't work when the handwriting is less. You got a $10,000 gift, Aunt Nellie. It's lined out. Written in there is $5,000. Now, can the court say, look, if the testator had known that the $5,000 were going to be no good, he would just as soon have had Nellie get the $10,000. The court won't make that assumption. The court's making the assumption, listen, for some reason or another, he does not want to give Nellie $10,000. He wants to give her a lesser sum. He can't give her the lesser sum because the lesser sum is not validated according to the formalities of the statute of wills. The larger sum is revoked. The lesser sum is no good. And Nellie gets nothing. That's how revocation by interlineation, as coupled with dependent relative revocation, works. It's a deep, heavy morass of a subject. But you can read the outline. You can annotate that little picture diagram there, and you've got all the law you need to know about that problem, except the problem of Probate Code 350, which drives me nuts every time I think about it, all right? Because it really adds a totally unnecessary complication. But if we didn't have complicated problems, we wouldn't need 60,000 lawyers in the state of California now, would we? So maybe we ought to be happy that there are these complications in the law. Okay. Caveat Probate Code Section 350, anytime you're dealing with revocation by interlineation, all right? What are we dealing with? We're dealing with Class Rule 12, all right? Class Rule 12. Look at what happens. What happens is that you've got the death of our particular character here. We've got the death at this point in time, all right? Now, what happens is that we discover, when we get ready to probate his will, that his will is lost or destroyed. Okay? Now, if it were destroyed, as we're going to have the problem in dependent relative revocation, if it was destroyed before he died at point X, if you're dealing with a situation of a lost or destroyed will before death, you got a big problem. Because Probate Code 350 will not allow you to prove up a copy of that will, even though you got 20 bishops to testify to the validity of that copy, that that copy is verbatim what the destroyed will is. You cannot prove up that copy unless what? Unless you can show that the will was destroyed by fraud or by a public calamity. All right. Now that is to be definitely distinguished from the situation where you discover, hey, look, the will has been destroyed. I'm sorry, it's been lost. It's been burned up. But it was lost at point Y, after the testator died. Under Probate Code 350, when the will is destroyed after the testator dies, as long as you have two credible witnesses to testify that the copy you're presenting is a valid copy, you can put that copy into the evidence. Now, we can illustrate it by a little hypo that was beginning to get passe until Norman Lear started subscription TV and put the Towering Inferno back on. All right? Let's take a look at a little situation here. That little funny little diagram there is what? That's a high-rise office building. All right? And there's a fire that starts down below. All right? Now, what happens is the testator's lawyer is at floor 100. That's where the will is. The testator is on floor 90, let's say. All right? The fire burns up. Now, what happens to the testator? He becomes an enchilada. He's dead. All right? The fire goes up to the will on floor 100 and is destroyed. We got any problem in the probate code 350? Why? Because the will is destroyed after the testator died. We got two witnesses that can come in with a copy to prove that this is the copy. It's admitted. All right? Well, what happens if we work the other way? What happens if the testator is not on floor 90, the testator is on floor 110? Okay? And now what happens? The fire comes up. It destroys the will on floor 100 before it turns the testator into our proverbial enchilada. So the will is destroyed before death. Can we prove up a copy? Sure, why? What's the fire? The fire is a public calamity. If the will is destroyed before death in a public calamity, probate code 350 still allows us to prove it up. All right. Now, what if the fire has started? And the testator says, son of a bitch, I got to change my will. And he writes out a new will. He doesn't know about holographic will, so he doesn't sign it. He's waiting to get two witnesses. It's sitting there on his desk. All right? What happens? He runs down to floor 100, rips up will number one, destroys it by physical act, gets in the elevator to go up to floor 110, the elevators are gone, he's fried, there's no execution of the second will. Okay, what can we do now? First will. He revoked the first will because he thought he was going to make it back up there to execute that second will. He didn't. If he had known that he was not going to make it up there to execute that second will, he never would have destroyed the first will. In most jurisdictions, that's a classic case to apply the concept of dependent relative revocation. In California, it's a classic case to apply the concept of dependent relative revocation. Why? Why was will one revoked? Because he thought will two was going to be valid. Will two wasn't valid. As long as the provisions are generally consistent, you can disregard the revocation of the first will. Super. We disregard the revocation of will one. Now we're faced with what problem in California? How do we admit a copy? Unless we can convince the court that because will number one was destroyed before his death as the result of a public calamity, we don't get the copy in. We don't get the copy in. Probate Code 350 is a major block to proving up cases under dependent relative revocation. Now, I got to tell you this. Of recent times, the bar examiners, when they put this thing together originally, I think, didn't really understand what they'd done by adding probate code 350, because they'd have all these detailed dependent relative revocation problems, and the goddamn will would be destroyed, and the analysis would be, hey, listen, even though dependent relative revocation works perfectly, probate code 350 doesn't allow you to prove up the copy. So what have they done of recent? Of recent times, they have gone to the basic situation of having a valid will, having that valid will revoked, having that valid will revoked by physical act. How do they get around probate code 350? The physical act is induced by what? You guessed it, fraud. Okay? When you can prove dependent relative revocation, when you can prove that that revocation was induced by fraud, what happens? DR, dependent relative revocation, lets you have that first will back in effect. How do you prove it up? Probate code 350, as long as you've got a good copy and two credible witnesses, allows you to prove up that will even though it was destroyed before death because it was destroyed by fraud. And that's the way validity and revocation work. It is a son of a bitch, huh? I mean, there are a lot of rules there. Wills is a rule-oriented course. And when I was first given the assignment to do this, I said to myself, my God, it's impossible. It's impossible. But you take a look at it, and you study the past questions, and you watch the way they fit together, and there is a flow. Now, it is April 19th, 1980. You've had a long time between now and the last week in July. Now, what happens is But for those people who don't see this tape until the last week of the course, it usually gives them a big laugh because they got about 10 days to soak this stuff up. I tell you people on the tape, even though you only got 10 days, if you'll take the approach and wrestle with it for several hours and work through the hypotheticals, it works. And before I let you go for lunch, I'm going to show you how it works in one of the easier questions. Let's take a look at hypothetical number one. It's on the back side of revocation. I wanted to finish up because the name of this game is confidence, all right? You've got to have confidence. Now let's take a look at this question. It was given in 1979, all right? It's one of the easier questions. That's why I give it to you just before the lunch break, all right? Well, we finish today, I'll give you the tougher ones. Tessie Arillo died leaving a two-page handwritten will having two dispository clauses. Clause 1 provided for a bequest of $10,000 to each of my children, Ann, Brad, and Charlie. Clause 2 provided that all of Tessie's stocks and bonds be given to Brad to be used as we have agreed. Tessie's home and her personal effects, together with $60,000, were not disposed of by the will. Tessie had signed her name on the bottom of page 1 of the will. Page 2 contained only the date in her handwriting and Brad's signature as a witness. When the will was offered for probate, several lines had been drawn through Ann's name in Clause 1, but the will is otherwise not altered. Brad is prepared to testify that several months after signing the will, Tessie, in his presence, drew lines through Ann's name, and Tessie told him she wanted to disinherit Ann. Well, there's our old friend, disinheritance by fiat. Brad is also prepared to testify that he had agreed with Tessie to use the income from the stocks and bonds for Charlie, but that the stocks and bonds were to be Brad's after Charlie's death. Charlie died several months before Tessie, leaving no spouse or descendants. The estate includes, in addition to Tessie's home and personal effects, $10,000 cash in stocks and bonds worth $70,000. Assume the applicable statutory provisions are the same as the comparable versions of the California Probate Code. Don't get away with it's a will's question. That's the only way that they can tell you that it's a will's question. The other way is you've got to be careful, and we'll work on this in crossover technique. In community property, we can get a will's issue. Why? Because community property says answer according to California law. What's California law include? The California Probate Code. All right? Two, if the will is valid, how should the estate be distributed? Discuss. Now, this is one of the few instances most of my approaches and my mind techniques are flexible. They have their ability to be changed by you. The approach in wills can be changed. I mean, you can add, you can subtract, you can redraw the diagrams. If I get you to do that, boy, I have really accomplished my mission, which is to show you how to learn. You get involved with the subject. Now, the method, however, for answering a wills question, I want to tell you, I've been doing this for 15 years. You look at every single question that comes down. There is no way, as I'm going to say from time to time throughout this course, there is no way to keep these facts straight in your head unless you happen to be the clone of Justice Cardozo. There is no way to keep these facts straight without a diagram. And in wills, what you do is on the right-hand side of the page, you lay out your family tree. You put the testator in his pine box. Testator was Tessie. She had a husband. He's croaked. You can draw an X through H. They had kids, A, B, and C. You take a look at the facts. You draw a cross through C. C's not around. C's dead. Right. On the right-hand side, you draw the family tree. Why? Because for the last 5 years, every bloody California wills question has involved problems of intestacy. And the only way you're going to be able to visualize who takes the intestate share is to have the family tree. Okay? Now, what do you do? On the left-hand side, you then chart out the instruments and events. This is an easy question. Why? There's only one will. There's only one document, the holographic will, $10,000 to each of A, B, and C, stocks and bonds to B, home and personal effects not disposed of. Okay, what do? You test the problem for validity, revocation, and what we're going to do this afternoon, distribution, and then you look for intestacy. Okay, what about validity? Capacity? You got any problems with capacity? This lady seemed to be of the right age. She'd had kids. She'd got to be over 18. There was no problem with mental delusion, no problem with mental deficiency. How about intent? We got no problem with capacity, intent. They're all okay. This is how you run it through your mind. This is the mental checklist. If you want, you can write it out on your scratch paper. But you'll start out your answer. The holographic document seems to be okay as far as capacity and intent are concerned. However, the major problem here is whether or not the formalities of the statute of wills have been met. This does not qualify as an attested will because the number of witnesses is not enough. There's only one witness in Probate Code 50. You don't have to know the Probate Code section. All you have to know is you need two witnesses. There are not two witnesses, okay? Now, however, what about Probate Code 53, the holographic will? Hey, this instrument is dated, it's signed, it's all in the testator's handwriting. Oops! What's on the second page? The witness's signature. What's the problem? The problem is the document is not all in the testator's handwriting. There is something else there. Now what do you have to wrestle with? You have to wrestle with the law fork. Is this jurisdiction going to use the surplusage test? If it does, the witness's signature is pure surplusage and the document will stand. Or is it going to use the intent to incorporate test? If it uses the intent to incorporate, testy clearly asked this guy to sign, therefore she clearly intended to incorporate his signature, even though it's mere surplusage, the document fails. That's the concept of forking. You take the basic issue both ways in terms of validity of the will. And what do you do in terms of distribution of the estate? You've got two problems. Either A, the will is valid, or it is invalid. If the will is valid, what happens? How about Anne? Her testate gift was revoked. But hey, look. What's the problem? She's not otherwise taken care of. You go through your whole will of revocation. What happens? You got a kid in there. There's no provision there for Anne anymore. Therefore, she can step up and take her intestate share, unless you want to construe, unless what? Unless you want to construe the lining out as an indication that Anne was to take nothing. Even if you do, however, what happens? Brad's gift is okay. He gets his $10,000. But there's no residuary clause. What happens to the balance of the property? It goes in testate. And how much does Anne get? Now, I want to show you something here. When I get up, when I do these presentations, sometimes people say that he is an egomaniac. All right? Now, let me tell you, there's a difference between having a large ego, which lawyers need, and being sick. All right? Difference is the large egomaniac who is psychotic doesn't admit errors. I'm going to show you. This was a true error on my part because I didn't follow my own drill when I made out this outline. If I wanted to, I could tell you that the intestate share is a typo when it says one-third. You want to know the real truth? The real truth is that when I put this damn diagram together, I forgot to follow my own drill to X out C. And when you X out C, what happens? Then you clearly see that there are only two intestate heirs, A and B. And they split the intestate share 50-50. But wait a minute, what about that evidence that N was to take nothing? What is that? That's an attempt to disinherit by fiat. The only way you can cut somebody out of their intestate share is to provide a valid alternative scheme. And that hasn't been done here. The only thing that's valid under this will, if anything, is the gift to Brad. And everything else passes intestate. Who are the intestate heirs? Ann and Brad. No disinheritance by fiat. Brad, what are the problems there? He takes his testate gift, a little teaser for tomorrow, if you can stand this high pressure, if not, wait for the tape. The gift to Brad is what we call a semi-secret trust. What happens is Brad wants to come in and prove up these details. Will he be allowed to? Quick preview, courts are split. Some courts say yeah, some courts say no. We'll talk about that in the first hour of tomorrow morning, all right? How about the intestate share? Again, he takes a half. He takes a half because he's one of the two intestate shares. What about Charlie? Charlie's dead. Therefore, Charlie, as we're going to see this afternoon, his gift is lapsed. Now, if Charlie, again, a little preview for this afternoon, if Charlie had left lineal heirs, then his lineals would step up under probate code 93 and take his interest. They would take his interest. They'd take another probate code 93. They'd also take it under the laws of intestate succession, come to think of it, because they would be the intestate heirs. But he didn't leave anybody, and as a consequence, he takes nothing. What happens if the will is not valid? If the will is not valid, then what happens is it just the whole thing passes intestate. A half to Ann, a half to Brad. Okay. What do we want to do now? It is 10 minutes to 1 by my watch. Let's try and take a short lunch and take up again at 20 minutes to 2, huh? Let's take up again at 20 minutes to 2 at 1:40, and we ought to be out of here by around 3 o'clock is what I'd guess, okay?